277, Chapter 6 of Jane Eyre. Welcome to Craftlit, the podcast for crafters who love books. My name is Heather Ordover, and I'm podcasting from the shores of the Potomac in Virginia, the Old Dominion. Episode 277, In Praise of the Signal. This week's episode is brought to you by Knit Circus, the e-newsletter that can arrive in your mailbox delivering three rings of knitting, sewing, and fun. You can sign up at www.knitcircus.com. And Craft an Effective Blog, a four-step system for creating a blog that makes sales without being slimy, by Tara Swiger and Diane Gilliland. And Little Acorn Creations, handmade accessories for heart and home. Happy Hands hand cream for knitters and crafters in 32 delicious scents, plus unscented, at www.happyhandsstore.com. And links to all of our sponsors can be found in the sidebar of the show notes at craftlit.com. Please visit them, as their support for the show is one of the things that keeps it free for you. Well, first this week, I want to express my condolences and also highlight a very tragic thing that happened. This is outside of the world of Sandy. If you are a knitter and read The Yarn Harlot, you have already heard this. And if you are not, but you are interested in the fiber arts in other arenas as well, you may not have heard that the site where Judith McKinsey keeps or kept pretty much everything she used for teaching, for historical purposes, for her books and her genius and everything, it burnt down. Now, I think from the images we've gotten from Hurricane Sandy, we are all quite aware of having to face that uncomfortable truth of what would I do if I lost everything, all of my pictures, all of my home, my everything, the things that make us feel connected to the world that we've inhabited prior to today. And I think we all know how horrible that might feel. I think when you add to that the professional life that you carry with you, there are things that you can't replicate. All of that stuff, gone. Up in flames. Stephanie Pearl McPhee on her blog has links to a website, and I will be putting the same links to the website on the Craftlit show notes for this episode 277. And getting materials back is one thing, you know, needles and fiber and spinning wheels. I think it was something like 14 spinning wheels are lost. I mean, it's just crazy. And that's replaceable stuff, and, you know, needles and fiber and even spinning wheels. They're all replaceable. But do go look at the list for some of the other things that Judith McKinsey might need. I've had the great good fortune of hearing her speak on a number of occasions, and she is really quite something. And everyone I know who's been lucky enough to take a class from her will not stop singing her praises. She is, to call her a powerhouse is kind of a massive understatement. So please do go take a look and see if you can help out with this horrible, horrible tragedy. And then on the Sandy side of things, last week I had said I was going to post links to a place that Aaron Ziegler had gone to donate things. They have a very, very helpful list of what's still needed in New Jersey. I found a Staten Island organization that my friend on Staten Island had said was a good one that actually is kind of a clearinghouse for Staten Island things in general. But then I actually got a hold of one of my former students. And on the night of the storm, I saw a post from her mobile phone to her Facebook page saying, "My sons and I are on the roof. Please send help." No. I didn't know where she was living, and so obviously I couldn't call 911. And anyway, at that point, it was evening in New York, and the waters were up already and getting worse. And I don't know how people were going to get to her. Well, I still don't have the whole story because she's still posting from a mobile phone, which means her ability to charge is limited. Oh, and by the way, linking to useful hand crank radio / cell phone charger. Thank you very much. To Diane, one of our listeners and Defarge designers, she sent me the link, and I thought I'd pass it on to you because it's a fairly useful little gadget there. I knew somebody had made one of these. Anyway, so my student, Annabelle, she and her kids were rescued. They are safe. They are fine. They have lost everything. So we now have a face and an age, and Annabelle is in law enforcement. She works for Customs and Border Control, and she, in living in this community in Far Rockaway, this is where a lot of police officers, a lot of fire department workers, and a lot of customs agents, they live in this one area of Far Rockaway that's called Zone A, that is hard hit when things like this happen. My feeling is, I've known Annabelle for really a long time now. It's horrifying. I said, I can't get over the fact that you're not 15 anymore. And the thought that she has 2 5-year-old boys is just beyond my ability to comprehend the passage of time. But I told her that I would put the word out. I put it up on Facebook. I'm putting it out here now. If you have anything that you would like to donate to a person with a face, please contact me directly, heather@craftlit.com, and I will send you the address. Now, she has given me her aunt's street address in Manhattan because you can't get mail to her no longer existent house out on Far Rockaway. They're sorting through the wreckage and figuring out what, if anything, is salvageable. But you know, it's clothes, it's warm clothes, it's warm blankets, it's things that 5-year-old boys might like to do to pass the time. And they can use everything. I mean, just everything. So I'm sending Annabelle what I've got, and I think I've got four boxes now of blankets and clothes and warm things. All I got those plastic bags you can get like at Bed Bath & Beyond that you can vacuum seal so that they compress, and I'm putting those in the boxes, and I'm going to ship them up to her. And so if you were really looking for a face to attach to your donation, I am now providing you with one, and letting you know she's a good kid. She's always been a good kid, and now she's a mom. And I have to say, you know, the thought of having to climb out onto the roof with my 2 children, who are not even that small, is a horrifying thought. And she was always a level-headed kid, and I know she was great, but my God, that's scary. So she's fine, but can definitely use the help. And I have a feeling, you know, don't second guess yourself. If you go, I wonder if it's, you know, if this is something I should send, just yes. Yes, it's something to send. Because if she can't use it, I guarantee you her neighbors can. Well, this week, I'm switching my recording schedule, which shouldn't affect you much, but it does mean there's going to be a bit of a lag between when I record and when I post the show. Our schedules are changing here. So sometimes there may be events that occur in that gap. And so I'm just apologizing in advance if that happens. But you know, there it is. Life is life. Wow, Heather, that was deep. Give us more of that. That was really, really good. But what that does mean is this week I am recording 2 episodes. So even though this week's podcast is going out like normal, next week's podcast, which is the post-Thanksgiving podcast, I will be up in New York with family, surrounded by family. And I am pre-recording an episode for publication on that day. So you will still get your stuff. I cannot guarantee subscribers that I'm going to get a Wuthering Heights out for you next weekend as well. I'm I'm trying to, but it's one of those, wow, there aren't enough hours in the day anymore things. So I'm working on it, and I'm hopeful, but I'm not feeling good enough to guarantee it yet. Well, you may be saying to yourself, Heather, in praise of the signal, what's that all about? And so I will share this with you. I'm fairly certain I've mentioned this before. When I lived in New York before, for a very long time, I noticed a thing that happened. If you were on the train and you got stopped between stations, and the conductor came on and said, I have no idea what's happening. It looks like there's a police action at the next station. I don't know how long we're going to be here, but as soon as I know something, I'm letting you know too. Click. Everybody was fine. You know, they break out the champagne and the smoked oysters and they share water bottles and, you know, their children get married and it's all marvelous because people know what's happening. And when they know what's happening, they can be calm. I have noticed of late a rash of people not using turn signals, which is very frustrating because either you're waiting to make a turn across traffic and you could do it if you could tell that the person was slowing down. And if they had their turn signal on, you could tell that they were slowing down to turn. But instead, they don't use a signal, and so you wait, and you lose your one opportunity, and then you wait there forever, because in Virginia, at any intersection, you will wait there forever. I know why people run red lights here. It's because if you get caught, you will sit at that intersection for the rest of your life. I can knit, and I'm not joking, I can knit 3 rounds on a plain vanilla sock at a stoplight here, if I get caught right at the beginning of the red. Now, that ain't right. And I know people in Tucson, you will not believe me. And people in Arizona in general, embrace your left turn signals. The way Arizona has gotten its left turn signal thing going is so much better than what's happening here. I don't want to disparage Virginia. I love Virginia, but dear Lord, they have got to get their turn signals correct. It's horrible. Horrible, I tell you. So there's all of a sudden there's this rash of lack of signal usage, and it's driving me batty because it's making people confused. You know, your main job as a driver is to get where you're going safely without hurting you or anybody else on the road. And one of the ways you can do that is by using your signals. Because if everybody behind you and everybody who's paying attention to you, if they're trying to turn, knows what you're doing, then they can plan appropriately, and then nobody has any trouble. We all move along. It's like zipper merging, you know? It's like one car, then the other 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 car, and everybody zips along nicely, and nobody dies. And that's really simple stuff, right? That shouldn't be so much to ask for, I don't think. But then I was listening to Anderson Cooper. He was on in the background, and I was, you know, knitting. Actually, I was knitting on Jane's ubiquitous shawl, which is flying along. I got to part B, chart B, and oh, it's just like butter. I'm so blown away. I can't believe I hadn't knit this before. It's such a beautiful pattern, and it's really easy to fall into the rhythm of. And so if you are late to the game, please join the knit along anyway. Because really, even if you don't catch up, nobody's going to smack your hand. But I'm really finding that once I got past like row 14 or 15, it just flew. I could read my knitting. I could see. Anyway, so I'm listening to Anderson Cooper. And Anderson was saying that the Long Island Power Company, the power company that is in fact in charge of where my former student lives, is not doing such a good job at getting the news out to its people. And even on their website, they're not really getting the news out. And instead, what they're saying is, you know, we have so many thousands of linemen out there trying to cut branches and clean things up and put things back together. You know, please, please understand how hard they're working. And Anderson Cooper's point was this. We've been trying for 2 weeks to get a hold of you people in management. And trust me when I say, your linemen, they are not the problem. When your trucks show up, people are so happy to see them. They are thrilled. They are going to give them coffee. They're going to hand them a bottle of scotch. It's not them. It's the management that is the problem. And I really don't like thinking evil of anyone. I want people to be behaving from their best self. And so I try very hard. I am trying very hard not to be a judgy person. I don't always manage to do this. I fail a lot, but I'm working on it, and I know I need to. So fine. But it seems to me that with a lot of things that have been happening in the world over the last 10 years, someone coming forward and explaining it to people would help an awful lot. And I did hear one piece of information that made a whole lot of sense to me. Now, for those of you who are science people, please check my facts and email me and let me know if I heard this correctly. Because this was a snippet on the radio, and I don't know if I heard the whole story. But what I think I heard was that if people's wiring in their homes was damaged by salt water, and of course that would be everybody on the coast, that if they turn the power on that goes to your house before they've checked the wiring in your house, they can blow up your house. Because the damage, the kind of damage that salt water does to electrical wiring is nasty, and it can be very, very problematic. It's like the problem with a live wire. You don't want a live wire. Well, evidently salt conducts, so you can see the problem, right? So what that means, if what I heard is correct, what that would mean is every single house with a live box has to be checked before they can throw the switch to turn on and reconnect the power in that sector. Now, if that's the case, no wonder these guys can't get an estimate of how long it's going to take. And can you imagine? So I don't know if that's real or not, but it's an explanation. And it seems to me that that kind of explanation comes along with a few implications, like, here's a handy tip sheet. If you can get into your basement, if you have gotten the water out, go look for these things. If you find this kind of corrosion, this color crystallization on your fuse box, this kind of patterning on the walls, you know, left behind from the water, then you need to call this number to report it so that we can clean it. If you don't find any of these things, you need to call this number to give us an all clear. We'll be able to send a different person out to check it and validate the all clear or not or whatever. But that way they could, you know, systematize what they're doing. Because it sounds like, I feel so bad for everyone. It's got to be just absolute and utter chaos. So, in fact, I got pinged by a listener who said that she had been in and seen the devastation, and that it was just appalling and shocking. And, you know, anytime you combine water damage with any other kind of damage, and then salt water with any other kind of damage, it's just bad. Anyway, on a happier note, I got to talk with someone who I think you will find fascinating this week. And even if you are not a knitter or a spinner or a quilter or a fiber artist, I am willing to bet that you own a sweater, at least, maybe even an afghan or a throw or a pet. And for all of those reasons, I did this interview. There is a new product out between the Yucalan people and Kristen Omdahl. And everybody loves Kristen, and all of the people who are on this blog tour and podcast tour, they all wanted to talk to her, which I think is great because everybody says she's just marvelous, and maybe someday she'll be able to come on the show as well. But I kind of wanted to talk to the people who make the product because not all of you are knitters, and how nice it would be for you to have an interview that actually means something to you too. So I learned a lot about how cool Yucalan is, and I am so happy to share that information here with you now. How long has this particular Rapture product been in the works for you guys?
It's been in the works since about January of this year, so basically a full year.
Wow.
Yeah, it takes a long time to go from an idea to realization.
It's true. Now, did Kristen contact you? Did you guys go to her? How did the whole starting start?
It was really sort of an interesting mutual happening. And Kristen had been a fan of Yucalan for some time. We've been in business since 1989. So 23 years, and we have a great fan following, and Kristen happens to be a fan of UCLan, and we have a mutual relationship with somebody else who just sort of put us in touch with each other, and Kristen was saying that she would really like to see UCLan available in a different scent, in something floral and pretty, and so one thing led to another, and we had some samples made up and decided that we would collaborate and work together to create a new scent, a new look. It's still, the packaging still looks the same, but we do have a different type of a label than our other products, so it stands out a little bit on the shelves, and it just seemed to be a natural fit for us to work together. Kristen is such an easygoing person who's wonderful to talk with, and people tend to gravitate towards her. They just really like her. There's something about her, and that was easy for me to want to work with her. So through trial and error, we came up with a scent that she really liked, which is the jasmine scent. And the reason that she likes jasmine so much is because she grows it in her backyard in Florida.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it really means something to her. She is drawn to that scent. Now, I didn't think I'd ever smelled jasmine before. I thought, ooh, I don't know about that. I'm not really into floral scents.
Right.
But when I got a sample in for her, I immediately fell in love with it.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I had no idea. And so anyway, she loved it as well. And then it was trial and error to get the right kind of jasmine. So this jasmine happens to be night blooming jasmine.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Is it?
Yeah, I used to grow it when I lived in California.
Oh, wow. And it blooms at night. I mean, I think that's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And it is a beautiful smell. Oh, I'm even more excited now. I thought it was just jasmine, but night blooming is very, very nice.
Yeah, yeah. And so then Kristen came up with the name Rapture, which is a wonderful name.
Yeah.
You know, you're just wrapping yourself in the beautiful, intoxicating scent of jasmine. And of course, she is a designer, so she's created patterns for wraps. So it was just a little play on words, and it goes together quite nicely, I think.
I love that. Now, how long has UCLan been on the market now? Because I, you know, to me, it seems like you guys have been around forever, but that
yes.
can't be true.
Well, we got our start in 1989, and we just started slowly. So just small little shows in the Toronto area, and word of mouth spread, and then we became more well-known in our local yarn shops, and then we started advertising, and it grew slowly from there. We never really worked too hard at it. It was just a natural, almost organic happening. It just flowed. People just talked about it, and then they shared their stories, and then they called us and would say, geez, you know what, I use it on this also. So we got our start in the yarn and knitting industry, but UCLan is used for so much more than that.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I had wanted to talk to you about, because, you know, I have, on the podcast, we have people who listen for lots of different reasons, but only about half of them are knitters. Mm-hmm. But I figured everybody must own a sweater. And
yes.
then there's probably even more, because the science behind what you guys have figured out how to do, I think, is fascinating.
Well, UCLan is definitely a unique product, and it's necessary. I think every household should have a bottle so that they can care for things. It's not just for a knitted item like a sweater or a scarf. It could be for a throw that's on the foot of your bed or on your couch. So anything that maybe you just need to take extra good care of. You're not going to toss it in the washing machine and dryer. It's something that you want to last. It could be a quilt as well.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Oh, yeah, it's really nice for quilts. And especially if you're a quilter, you need to wash your fabric first.
That's right.
A very important step in the process, and it's great to use UCLan for that. Also, UCLan isn't going to dull the colors over time or break down the fibers or the elasticity, So it's really nice to use on your heirloom pieces as well, because you know you're going to protect it and you're not adding any undue stress or wear to the fibers.
Oh, that's so interesting. So this isn't, okay, I'm going back in time, mm-hmm. before you guys were around. It seems in my memory that the only thing you could find on the market was woolite. And since growing up and since becoming a knitter in earnest, instead of just kind of sitting around with my grandmother, I've learned that woolite is a product of the devil. and the problem is I've learned that by hearing other people tell me that, but I don't understand what was so bad about woolite in the first place. But now you're saying that your product isn't just a wool thing, it's also cotton, that fabric.
Yep. Oh. It's for delicates in general.
Okay, so can you explain why woolite is Satan in a bottle?
Well, how about I don't tell you what's wrong with woolite, because that would be terrible. How about I tell you what's really the positive spin about Yukon versus the negative of woolite? I would feel awful.
That sounds very grown up and lovely of you.
Well, you know, a lot of people like woolite, and I'm not going to change their minds, but when they're in a shop buying something, whether it's yarn or lingerie or baby items, if it's the shop owner or the shop clerk who's saying, oh, please don't use woolite.
Yep, that's where I heard
it. It's going to damage your fibers. Well, that has more clout than me telling them that. So, and it's funny, at the National Needlework Association trade show, when you hear the odd person will say, oh, I just use woolite, other knitters will turn around with an exasperated look on their face like, what? Oh, my gosh, you can't do that. And then that person feels like, wow, what have I done? I had no idea. And they just don't know, because they need to be educated.
Yeah.
So we're on a mission to educate people. So I'll tell you what's so great about Yukon.
Cool.
So it's first and foremost, it's a no-rinse product.
Okay.
It's no rinse because it doesn't have the traditional harsh phosphates or petrochemicals of other washes.
Mm.
So it's a very mild formula. You can use it on your hair. You can use it on your body. It's safe for that.
Wow.
And because it's so mild, it's not going to dull the color. It won't strip the fiber of its moisture or its goodness. It's not going to cause your fibers to break, which would leave little fuzzies and pills on your fiber. And it won't break down the elasticity over time. So it's even good for bathing suits or workout wear, that sort of thing, with a bit of stretch to it.
Wow.
And the other things that are good about it is that we use lanolin. Lanolin is a natural conditioner.
Yay.
Also, lanolin is a dust mite deterrent.
No way.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That is really cool.
Yeah, so high-end bedding is, mattresses uh-huh. that are made out of wool. The reason that they're using wool is because wool is, dust mites don't care for wool, and it's the lanolin in the wool that keeps them at bay.
I didn't know that. Oh, that mm-hmm. is such mm-hmm. good news.
So it's nice to use Yukon to wash your bedding as well. And that touch of lanolin is a natural conditioner. So if you're washing a sweater, some people will say, oh, I can't wear wool. It's itchy and scratchy. I'm allergic to it. Sometimes all it requires is a good laundering with a good product. And with Yukon, you've got just a touch of lanolin in it that is adding it back into the fiber. Because when wool is scoured, it's under pretty extreme conditions, and the lanolin is stripped out of the fiber, and then the little barbs of the wool stick out, causing it to feel itchy to people. So when you're conditioning it, those barbs will lay back down, and then the wool is softer.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And then we also use essential oil. So we're not using a synthetic fragrance in our formula. We're using a pure essential oil. Our first scent was eucalyptus, and eucalyptus is a natural moth and flea inhibitor, so perfectly suited for woolens.
Right.
And then we brought in lavender, and that took off really big in the baby industry.
Ah.
Lavender as well is a natural moth and flea inhibitor. And you mentioned that you used to live in California. I understand that fleas are a problem out there.
Yes, they are.
We've had people tell us that they would line their baby cribs with eucalyptus or lavender to keep fleas away.
Oh, that may, and it smells so good.
Yeah, yeah, isn't that nice? So you're getting those beneficial essential oils in the formula as well. It's not a high concentration, so you're not feeling overpowered. You're not smelling like eucalyptus or lavender when you're walking around, but you know you've got the benefits of that in the fiber. So maybe you're going to wash your sweater or your quilt for the season before you put it away. You've got those benefits in there. And so you're not rinsing the formula out of the garment because that's just adding extra wear and tear to it.
Right.
But we do tell people if they want to rinse, they can. So if you've got cottons and you feel kind of funny about not rinsing the product out,
right,
go ahead and rinse it out. It's not going to hurt it. You're just rinsing out those properties that you've just put into the fiber.
Right. So even like baby clothes,
mm-hmm,
would be really good, yeah, to use eucalyptus with.
Yeah, it's so nice for baby items. We have a lot of baby stores that sell our product. A lot of mothers who use it on their wool diaper covers as well. But those baby items, you've got them pressed up against your baby's skin.
Mm-hmm.
You want it to be a pure, natural product that you're washing with. You don't want to be worried about whether baby's skin is sensitive to the product that you're using.
Yeah.
Eucalan, it really comes through. Well, the good thing is that we're committed to the environment. So we're trying to use gentle, mild ingredients. We want people to care for everything so that it lasts them longer.
Yeah.
We don't say, you know, wear it once and wash it. That's not necessary, except when it comes to your lingerie. But really, sometimes you can just spot clean your garment.
Right.
Why wash the whole thing if you can spot clean it? So then on this little spin of the being environmentally friendly, everything that we make is made within an hour and a half radius of our office.
No way!
Mm-hmm. Everything.
Wow, that means bottles, packaging.
Yep, bottles, caps, labels, boxes, the product itself. It's all done within an hour and a half of our office, and it helps, you know, cut costs on our,
yeah,
manufacturing, our shipping, everything. And it's all local, and we strive to keep it local. We could have it manufactured in other countries.
Yep.
But we're committed to keeping it local and using our local resources and employing local people. So I think people really appreciate it when you are making something locally.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have all the resources we need in our backyard, so why not use them?
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a level of pride of product and pride of place that comes with that, that you just, you don't, you know, you miss otherwise. And,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and I think it does show in the final wash.
and I think that our customers appreciate it, and it's actually helped us to get some accounts in other countries because they want,
yeah,
a high-end product made in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
no, it's,
their customers appreciate it. Our customers are really important to us. I mean, we've been using the product for all these 23 years ourselves out in the country with hard water, and we've experimented and we've washed literally everything, including our animals. So, but it really makes a big difference when our customers are the ones writing us saying, we love your product. And by the way, I also use it on this.
Yeah.
Or how about this? And so we got so many ideas from the public, and you know, they keep us on our toes with regards to the formula.
Sure.
They question us about the ingredients. And so we really need to answer to them. And they're the ones kind of driving what's going on with our product. So the fact that Kristen asked for a specific scent, it was just a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah.
To move forward and try something completely different, something floral, because we've got the eucalyptus, the lavender, grapefruit, and unscented. And oh, and then to add a floral,
yeah,
wow, that's just, it's a bit of a departure.
Yeah.
But because it's an essential oil, it still fits within our mandate to keep it natural and not to use synthetic overpowering fragrances.
And that counts for a lot, because I know there are plenty of people who, you know, they react kind of badly to the synthetic fragrances, uh-huh, you know, get walloped with them on the train and go, wow, did you have to wear the whole bottle? But there's something that's so subtle about essential oils in general.
Scents are such a polarizing subject for people. When I'm at a trade show and I might say, here, would you like to smell them? Oh, yes, I'd love to smell them. So I tell them the scent first. I don't just hand it to them because some people have allergies.
Yeah.
So eucalyptus, okay, all right, lavender. And people, wow, they just, their face changes. They either love it or they hate it. So lavender is one that's really, really big for people. Literally, they love it or hate it. There's no,
really?
Geez, I don't know, I'm not really a fan. They, if they are allergic or they just can't stand the smell of lavender, we don't let them smell it. But the jasmine,
mm-hmm,
we just introduced it starting in August. We took it to a couple of trade shows for lingerie. Everybody wanted to smell it, mm-hmm, which was really nice. And truthfully, every single person who smelled it loved it.
Really?
Instantly. It was on their face. They just fell in love there. Oh, they were so happy.
Wow.
And so, in case you didn't know, jasmine is an aphrodisiac.
Ha ha ha.
Aha.
The world knows now.
Not good, but it will make you happy. It will just, it just does something to you, and that's what scent does. Scent is so powerful. And I really enjoy talking to people about the different scents that we have when we're at a show. And they just are so passionate about it.
What fun.
Mm-hmm. Another interesting thing that you can do with eucalan, and I do it all the time, is you can put a little bit of eucalan into a spray bottle with water.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're using the eucalyptus, it's a nice fabric refresher. You can spray that on your curtains or on your upholstery.
Oh.
Yep, or on your clothing. You've got some wrinkles. You just want to spray it on your clothing, and then you can press it with the iron. It's a really nice refresher that way.
What a great idea. Now, boy, our timing couldn't be more perfect, because now I'm going to go back to the local yarn store. I'm going to buy a bunch of bottles of the eucalyptus scent, and I'm going to give them as Christmas presents. Here, let me tell you all the cool things you can do with this bottle. It's a hat, a pterodactyl. Oh, how cool.
That's all trades. That's great.
Do you have all these tips on your website? Have you guys put all these down?
Yep. On eucalan.com, you can find, there's many, it's really a very informative website, and it has all kinds of tips. It tells you how to pick the scent that is best for you, and it tells you all different types of items that you can wash, like sheepskins, lingerie, mm-hmm, woolens, needlepoint, silk and rayon, or wedding dresses.
Wow.
Anything like that. And then it tells you how to use the product itself.
Oh, how cool. Okay, well, that's going to be bookmarked on my computer. Oh, cats? Can you wash? I mean, I know that washing a cat in general is always fraught.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, that's fun. Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, you can. And yes, I've done it before. But yes, you can wash your pets. You can wash cats, dogs, guinea pigs, and hamsters. I know some pets, I think it's important to check first to make sure that a certain type of an animal isn't susceptible to problems with certain essential oils.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a local pet shop that sells the eucalyptus and the lavender scents, and they sell a lot of it. And people can wash their pet bedding in it, mm-hmm, and they can wash their animals. The nice thing about washing a dog, for example, is that if you don't get it all rinsed out, it's okay. There's a touch of lanolin in it, which will condition their skin, right, so that they're not so itchy and scratchy.
Right.
And then if you're using the eucalyptus or the lavender, it's going to help keep the fleas away.
Right.
So it's really easy on them, and it doesn't sting their eyes or anything like that.
Oh, wow. So it's a no more tears kind of.
Yeah, it's very mild, yeah. but it isn't just for your woolens. It is really nice for your lingerie. Everybody has it. You might say, oh, you know, it's just cotton. I throw it in the washing machine and the dryer. But you might have something special. And bras really need special care.
Yeah.
And we have some information about that on our website. There's a lot of videos online about it as well. And really, they should only be worn twice and then washed. So almost every other wear, you should be washing them, hand washing them.
Right.
So that all the elasticity, it all goes back into place, and it's like new. It actually keeps your undergarments newer for longer, and instead of them getting all stretched out, because your body oils saturate the fibers,
right.
And that's what is breaking down the fibers. So it's important to keep things clean. And I think the new scent, Rapture, really speaks to people in the lingerie world. The lavender used to be the most popular for lingerie, but now it, with the introduction of Rapture, it's already become a hit because it's something different.
Right.
It's got that floral smell, and it's an intoxicating scent. It's something different for us.
Right.
So people are very happy to have something different to try. And Kristen, although she is so well-known in the knitting world, and people are so excited that she's got a product that she's endorsing and putting out, people, like I said, gravitate towards her, and they just love her personality. And she was very well-received with our lingerie accounts as well. So
great.
The scent that she's come up with is really translating well into the lingerie world. And so we're excited about that.
That's so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. Well, yay for you guys. I mean, for sticking with it and keeping it local and keeping it environmentally, not just friendly, but keeping the environmental impact low all the way around. That's, you know, huge, huge congratulations and thanks to you for doing that for us.
Well, thank you.
It makes me feel...
We love it. I mean, it's a great day here at work every day.
And so there we were, winding down with the conversation, when I suddenly remembered I actually had an expert on the phone with me, and there were a couple of questions that have plagued me about washing delicate items. And I thought, oh, well, now is as good a time as ever to find out the truth. Okay, so I have a big Afghan that I want to clean, and I'm going to put it into the basin of the washing machine.
Mm-hmm.
How much Euclan? Is it something that I can ballpark? Like I can do it like when I'm making soup and I'm just kind of tossing stuff in and I'm eyeballing it? Or is it one of those products that I really do need to measure?
No, you don't need to measure. You can ballpark it. I would say for a large Afghan, if you're filling your tub full of water, I would say about 3 tablespoons.
Oh, that's all?
More than enough. Yeah. Yes, Euclan is very concentrated. So that 16.9 or 500 ml bottle will do about 90 hand washes. You're just using a teaspoon for a wash in a, like in a bathroom sink.
Right.
So you're getting a lot of washes out of one bottle. And then the smaller bottle, the 3.3 ounce 100 ml bottle, will do about 20 washes. So it's ideal to go away for a week or two at a time.
Right.
Fill up your bag. So a little goes a long way. Same thing with spot treating. You don't need a lot, but you can use it full strength on any spots. Now, if your Afghan was extremely dirty, like maybe animals have been laying on it, that sort of thing, you can't use too much. Is my point. You can't use too much. And the more you use, it's just going to be conditioned more, but it might be more beneficial to do 2 washes. Instead of overdoing it with the Euclan, why not just wash it once if you find it still needs to be laundered again because it has some spots on it or you spilled something on it, then wash it again. But you don't need too much. And I think some people overuse it and it's not necessary.
And then That's so good to know. I just like knowing that I can't screw it up, I think, for
you
me.
You can't. No.
That's a very happy thing. And then
you can't leave it in the water for too long either. Don't worry about that. If you put it in the machine and then, oh my gosh, 2 hours later you forgot that you did that?
Yeah.
Okay. It won't hurt it.
Yeah, you've been watching me do laundry, haven't you?
I certainly have.
Well, and then we all get distracted. It's true, you know, and then kids come home or the phone rings or you have to sit down and knit for a while.
Depending upon what you're washing, if it's a heavy, old woolen blanket, it's really dirty, you can turn it on to it like a delicate agitation and just let it work for a few minutes. That just helps relax the fibers and get the dirt out. We recommend tepid water, so just room temperature water. Cold water can be a little bit shocking.
Right.
And we never, never, never use hot water.
Right.
So tepid water is the best. And also, when you're washing with the machine, this is another thing. If you're going to rinse your item,
right.
Actually, it's whether it's machine washing or hand washing, it's the rinsing that causes the shrinking. It's not the product that you're using to wash your garment in. So you could be using regular, ordinary powdered detergent. That is not going to cause the shrinking. It's the water temperature that causes shrinking. So if you think you're washing in cold and then you're going to rinse in cold, your water won't be exactly the same temperature. It's the slightest change in water temperature that causes those fibers to shrink up.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's really just best to use one water. So you're saving water, you're saving energy, but also you're saving that extra wear and tear and the potential for shrinkage.
The other question that I've always had about doing things like quilts and afghans, and especially afghans when they're wool, you don't want to put them in a heat dryer, but is it okay to throw it into a dryer with the air dry cycle? Because this is huge and it's winter now.
Yeah. I would probably do that myself.
Yeah.
Because something like that, when it's wet, even though you're using the machine, which is the best way to do it because it will spin out the excess water.
Right.
Doing that yourself in a bathtub would be, very difficult.
Yes.
So the machine is the best way. You're going to get a lot of that water out, which will make it not quite as heavy. But if you were to hang that up over your shower rod or something like that, it's just going to really stretch and pull.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally would put it in my dryer just on an air fluff just to get it going, to get it moving a little bit and to remove more of the moisture. And then at that point, I would take it out and drape it over the edge of the tub or the shower rod. If it was summertime, you could lay it outside on the table as long as it's not in the direct sun.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like I'm armed now to go clean, and my husband's not going to know what hit me. Maybe I shouldn't tell him.
Well, it'll smell nice in the house, that's for sure.
That's definitely true. Well, I have already tested my Rapture sample, and it is a marvelous smell. And now, of course, I am going to go and do all of my underwear. Because now I'm thinking,
exactly.
That's probably due.
I had somebody just tell me that they were staying home, but they had a hot date with Rapture. So she was washing all her lingerie.
Yes, for those sexy moments in the laundry room. Oh, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk to me.
Oh, you're welcome. It was so much fun talking with you.
Isn't Jennifer Edgar just the most adorable thing in the world? And don't you feel like you're armed with information now where you can go out and almost feel like maybe you want to wash things? I've been attacked by this uncanny desire to go and launder items, and that is so not me. So I'm very excited. I'm also excited because the good people at Euclid and Kristen Omdahl together are offering a giveaway of a 100 milliliter bottle. I cannot say that 10 times fast. 100 milliliter bottle of Rapture. So here's how this giveaway goes. Come over to the show notes at craftlit.com for episode 277, and in the comments section, write down what is your favorite or oddest or coolest usage of a Eucalan product that you have ever experienced. It could be the item you washed. It could be how you washed it. It could be how the animal responded upon being washed. But write down something about the use of a Eucalan product, and then I will go in and I will take all of the comments, and I will put a number generator, a random number generator on it, and I will pick comment number blah blah blah, and that person is the one who I will contact and who will win the 100 milliliter bottle. Please make sure that when you leave a comment, you have signed in some way that would give me an opportunity to contact you. And that means if you need to leave an email as part of your post, put your email and then a space and then write the word at and then a space and then your domain and then a space and write the word dot and then a space and write com, because otherwise spam bots can collect your email address and hit ya, and we don't want that to happen. So huge thanks to Jennifer E. Edgar and Kristen Omdahl. It's so exciting to have a new product out on the market, and especially right from a company like this that's all environmentally sound and doing things the right way, and just makes me happy. Well, also don't forget that during the month of November 2012, if you donate to the podcast in any way, shape, or form, you will be put into the running for the awesome book, Fabrics A to Z by Dana Willard. And there is a link to the book that you can see from the show notes. And on the 1st of December, I will put all of the names of the people who donated into a hat, and I will pull out a name, and you will win the book. Oh, I also wanted to tell you, it's funny because, you know, with different sponsors, different things happen. For one thing, I'm working on my holiday sanity calendar with Tara Swiger. And I needed to have started that a while ago, but I'm getting it together. Before Thanksgiving, I am having it all planned out so that I have basically 4 good weeks of planning. But I also have my Happy Hands cream that I'm wearing today. And this week I am wearing Hippie Chick. Now, she mentioned this when we talked on the podcast a couple weeks ago, that this was the one that was kind of a patchouli scented one. And she said, but it's really subtle and it doesn't make you go, wow, 1968 flashback. And it's true. It's a very subtle scent. And I can see why some people say that this is their favorite, because it's a little spicy and a little earthy, and it smells the way you kind of wish people would smell. I love it. It's horrible though, doing a podcast with hand lotion on that smells so good, because every time I put my hands near my face, or anytime I, you know, brush hair out of my eyes, I go, I just have to stop and smell my hands, and then I have to go back and re-record again. So, you know, it's the price we pay for soft hands, I think, is what I'm saying. Well, everything that you've heard up until now, and what you will hear of Jane Eyre in a moment, was actually pre-recorded. And it was recorded right before I got my first substituting job. And so that's why this podcast came out a little bit late for those of you who listen in real time. And I apologize for that. But I'm not going to apologize for having gainful employment every once in a while, because I kind of needed that, especially with the holidays coming in. But the other thing that I kind of preemptively did this week was I finally got all of the audio reset as a single download audiobook for Cool for Cats. Now, Julie at Forgotten Classics has the very first chapter for free for anyone to listen to over at her Forgotten Classics blog, and I am linking to that. But if you listen to that and decide you like it, the audiobook version is slightly less expensive than the book version, and it is available both at the craftlit.com site and over at the Cool for Cats site, which is also linked to from craftlit.com and linked to from Julie's page at Forgotten Classics. It is a noir-ish thriller, Music plays a very large part of it. So especially if you like jazz, old school jazz, stand-up bass jazz, there's some interesting music going on. And in fact, one of the things that we did when we set up the original Cool for Cats site was we went through Amazon and all of the songs that are mentioned by the main characters in the book, we linked to. And so there's a player, so you can get to all of the music if you wanted to get this, you know, a Mingus album or whatever. It's easy to find via crafting-a-life.com/C4C. C, the letter, for the numeral C, the letter. And so all of that is available to you now. I am working on prepping the Wuthering Heights audio because we are, by the end of Thanksgiving, we will be 6 chapters away from the end of that book. Now, Les Mis is turning out to be a bit of a kerfuffle, not in a bad way, but in a kind of a convoluted way. And so it's still on the docket. It's just under construction. Does that make sense? The other thing I wanted to let you know before we attack the chapter of Jane Eyre is subscribers. Things have been moved. Audio is in place. We are waiting for the Libsyn people to throw the switch on their end. Once that switch is thrown, you will be contacted and you will find out how to throw the switch on your end. Some of the changes you will see. For normal listeners who just listen to the podcast, you will see no changes at all. For those of you who have the iPhone, iTouch, or Droid app, you will suddenly start to see subscriber only, it'll be called premium content, I think, audio pop up. That will be explained to you within the app. For those of you who are current subscribers, you will be contacted directly and told what to do to throw the switch on your end. And so for anyone else who was thinking about subscribing, and this is going to sound weird, hold off on it for about a week. Check the iPhone store or the Droid store. And once you see the app become free, then you know that the new subscriber system is in place and that you can download the app and access the content that way. If you don't have an iPhone or a Droid or an iTouch, don't sweat it. You can still access the subscriber content via the web, just in a much nicer streamable format, nicer than before. And that will give me the opportunity to do a lot more really interesting things for you, like the very first Chaucer episode, where I was able to provide pictures and content information and links. That is going to work. Finally, we have a delivery system that will now make it possible for the Chaucer audio to be Chaucer audio video and be easily accessed and really, I think, more useful because it's hard to visualize stuff like this. In fact, that's so true of even books like Jane Eyre. Well, I need to read you a funny little email that I got from Aaron Ziegler. Aaron and I worked this week on ChopBard because I am going to be on ChopBard as not me. Ha ha. It was really scary. I haven't done acting stuff in a really long time, so I was a little nervous. But as you know, Aaron Ziegler is marvelous and wonderful and put me at my ease because we talked for like 2.5 hours beforehand about theater and New Jersey and natural disasters and the world and all sorts of stuff and Jane Eyre. And when he emailed me to say, hey, let's record this week, he also said, I started listening to Jane Eyre. I wasn't sure I could make it past chapter one. The abuse you suffered, the position she was in, unbearable. I wanted to strangle that little boy, bare hands, just wrap them around his puppy-killing neck and choke the shallow life right out of him. Thankfully, I sucked it up and listened on. The part where Jane stood up for herself and told Mrs. Reed where to stick it, so worth it. Just when I thought, nah, this classic isn't for me, you suck me into another book. And I loved the Gulliver reference in the book. How much more impact is that one little reference going to have for the rest of your listeners now? And I thought the same thing. The Gulliver stuff, that was just, I was so jazzed by having that drop in. And this week, there's another thing that's just, it goes by. It goes by in such a way that listening to it again a month ago, I didn't hear it. But today, we really meet Helen Burns today. And she is a very famous character because she will really stand out in your mind because she is iconic. She is a symbol as well as a character, which puts her in kind of an awkward position. It's an enormous burden to carry as a character to also be symbolic of something. But she's written so well, and she's written in such a believable way, knowing that she, at least in some respect, is also, because this book has many layers, a representation, a stand-in for Charlotte Bronte's older sisters who were at school with her. Now, we know that they were a religious family. We know that faith mattered enormously to these girls. But we also know that these girls did not shy away from, well, in Emily's case, from writing characters like Heathcliff and Kathy, didn't shy away from questions of what to do if you are a woman who is widowed and you have a child and you have to find a way to make your way through life, which is the tenet of Wildfell Hall. Or you have a person like Jane Eyre, who is, for all intents and purposes, a blight on society. She is poor. She has no relations who will take her in with any love or affection. She is as alone in the world as you can be without being destitute and forced into prostitution. And the comments that the Bronte sisters were making on society at large and how, you know, the measure of a society's health is how they treat the least of us, the widows and the orphans and people who need help. That's one of the things that we learn is a fairly significant and I think important way to judge the health of a society. Well, Jane is not being treated particularly well, and we're going to see even more. I don't want to say even more bad things are going to happen to her, because like I said, this is not Dickensian. This is not Oliver Twist. And just like Aaron Ziegler points out, just when you think that it's going to be that kind of gut-wrenching, heart-twisting, stab the knife in and rotate it, not gently, it turns out that it's not going to be that kind of a scene. It's going to be different and more than what you expect. Well, that's all fine. But today, Helen Burns gives a little speech to Jane about her point of view on her own punishments and how people treat her and how she takes that treatment and learns from that treatment. Listen to her describe the way her brain works. And those of you with children, especially those of you who have children who've been told that your kid is ADD, not ADHD, but ADD, the kind of dreamy, easily distractible child, listen to Helen. This isn't new. I literally was parking the car and sat there in the car while I was listening to this, stopped it, rewound it, and listened to it again. I mean, I was gaping. My jaw was on my lap. I was blown away. And it's impossible for me not to believe that this is in some way directly connected to the Bronte family. And then it made me think more about Branwell, their older brother. Now, I'm not going to go into Branwell, but I am going to tell you this. One of our listeners emailed and said, go listen to, I think it's stuff you should have learned in history class, Growing Up Bronte. I'm putting a link to this podcast on the show notes. Now, I don't think that the two women who host the show, who do a marvelous job, I don't know that either of them have read the Bronte biography that's the newest one, the one that I'm reading right now. They've definitely got some of their information from Mrs. Gaskell's biography that was written right around the time of Charlotte's death. And so there are some things they say where I thought, now I'm going to have to go back and check with the new biography, because I think that a couple of the things that they say are kind of the popular conventional wisdom, kind of the same way that we say, oh, you know, Aran sweaters and Irish fishermen sweaters, they have a pattern on them that was used to identify the dead bodies, which is just not true. I mean, people will tell that to tourists because it makes them feel good, but it's not factual. Sadly, I mean, it's a marvelous story. And evidently, it all came from, I was reading this on Ravelry, evidently it came from one woman at one point in history, 100 years ago, saying that they identified her brother from his sock when his dead body washed up on shore. And it was because she had cast on 60 stitches and dropped 4. Got it? So she cast on 60 stitches. At some point, she dropped 4 and made a mistake. And it was those 4 dropped stitches that allowed them to identify her brother's body. It was not a pattern in the sock. It was not a pattern in the sweater. Anyway, so the popular wisdom stuff about the Brontes and the popular stories that we've heard all our lives, some of them are true, some of them are not. As we go through the book, I will continue to work towards helping us all know the truth. But in the meantime, hop on over and listen to that podcast, Growing Up Bronte, and then listen to the follow-up, which I think was from March 14th, where they did the Brontes as adults. Because right now, in the Bronte biography I'm reading, the girls are still too small to be writing. They're starting to create their imaginary worlds, but I haven't gotten to any of the juicy stuff that goes straight into the books that we're reading yet. So you can kind of fill in a stopgap with another great podcast. Oh, and in the other great podcast thing, I wanted to give a little shout out to Knitting Rose, who mentioned Wuthering Heights and the subscriber stuff that we do here on Craftlit and Just the Books, because all of a sudden, a bunch of you came over from Knitting Rose, and thank you for joining us. And Rose, thank you for the shout out. I hope if you are a knitter and you haven't discovered the Knitting Rose podcast, that you go over and take a listen. And not only that, but my goodness gracious, is her yarn Marvy. I am knitting a fabulous bamboo version of the Mrs. Hudson's shawl that I've been working and reworking. I did the prototype for the Knitting Olympics, and now I'm doing a slightly different version. I'm not sure yet. But that is some of her yarn, and it's just beautiful. The color is so lovely. And then I have another sock yarn ball of hers that I am, or a skein of hers that I'm working up for Christmas presents. Shh, we can't talk too loudly about the Christmas presents. But yeah, I'm knitting like a fiend, and I'm working very hard on forcing myself to learn how to lever knit. This is the Stephanie Pearl McPhee production knitting. On one video, she calls it Irish cottage knitting. Other times she calls it production knitting, but it's a lever action where your hand is basically functioning like a needle on a sewing machine. And it's quite good for you ergonomically. And it takes some doing to learn. There are videos out there now on YouTube that are more helpful than they used to be, but it's still quite a to-do, and it just requires time and attention. So there's one really obscure reference that goes by in Jane Eyre this week, and it should surprise absolutely no one that this particular kind of obscure reference is biblical in nature. I know, shocking, right? What with their father being a minister, why would it be from the Bible? It's an allusion to Acts, the book of Acts, chapter 24, verse 25, and it's about Felix leaving something until tomorrow, kind of a Scarlett O'Hara move. And it turns out that Felix was a Roman governor who, quote-unquote, trembled when he heard St. Paul teach about righteousness, temperance, and, I think the important one, judgment. So when the reference to Felix goes by, it is not Fix It Felix from Wreck-It Ralph, which, by the way, lovely movie. Oh my gosh, lovely movie. I teared up at the end. I'm such a cheeseball. So not that Felix, different Felix. But I think that's the big one. And so without any more yammering, I am going to play for you the marvelous Chapter 6 of Jane Eyre.
The next day commenced as before, getting up and dressing by rushlight, but this morning we were obliged to dispense with the ceremony of washing. The water in the pitchers was frozen. A change had taken place in the weather the preceding evening, and a keen northeast wind, whistling through the crevices of our bedroom windows all night long, had made us shiver in our beds and turned the contents of the ewers to ice. Before the long hour and a half of prayers and Bible reading was over, I felt ready to perish with cold. Breakfast time came at last, and this morning the porridge was not burnt. The quality was eatable, the quantity small. How small my portion seemed! I wished it had been doubled. In the course of the day I was enrolled a member of the fourth class, and regular tasks and occupations were assigned me. Hitherto I had only been a spectator of the proceedings at Lowood. I was now to become an actor therein. At first, being little accustomed to learn by heart, the lessons appeared to me both long and difficult. The frequent change from task to task, too, bewildered me, and I was glad when, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Miss Smith put into my hands a border of muslin 2 yards long, together with needle, thimble, etc., and sent me to sit in a quiet corner of the schoolroom, with directions to hem the same. At that hour most of the others were sewing likewise, but one class still stood round Miss Scatcherd's chair reading, and as all was quiet, the subject of their lessons could be heard, together with the manner in which each girl acquitted herself, and the animadversions or commendations of Miss Scatcherd on the performance. It was English history. Among the readers I observed my acquaintance of the veranda. At the commencement of the lesson, her place had been at the top of the class, but for some error of pronunciation, or some inattention to stops, she was suddenly sent to the very bottom. Even in that obscure position, Miss Scatcherd continued to make her an object of constant notice. She was continually addressing to her such phrases as the following. "Burns," such it seems was her name. The girls here were all called by their surnames, as boys are elsewhere. "Burns, you are standing on the side of your shoe. Turn your toes out immediately." "Burns, you poke your chin most unpleasantly. Draw it in." "Burns, I insist on your holding your head up. I will not have you before me in that attitude." Etc., etc. A chapter having been read through twice, the books were closed and the girls examined. The lesson had comprised part of the reign of Charles I, and there were sundry questions about tonnage and poundage and ship money, which most of them appeared unable to answer. Still, every little difficulty was solved instantly when it reached Burns. Her memory seemed to have retained the substance of the whole lesson, and she was ready with answers on every point. I kept expecting that Miss Scatcherd would praise her attention, but instead of that she suddenly cried out, "You dirty, disagreeable girl! You have never cleaned your nails this morning!" Burns made no answer. I wondered at her silence. "Why," thought I, "does she not explain that she could neither clean her nails nor wash her face, as the water was frozen?" My attention was now called off by Miss Smith, desiring me to hold a skein of thread while she was winding it. She talked to me from time to time, asking whether I had ever been at school before, whether I could mark, stitch, knit, etc. Till she dismissed me, I could not pursue my observations on Miss Scatcherd's movements. When I returned to my seat, that lady was just delivering an order of which I did not catch the import, but Burns immediately left the class, and going into the small inner room where the books were kept, returned in half a minute, carrying in her hand a bundle of twigs tied together at one end. This ominous tool she presented to Miss Scatcherd with a respectful curtsey. Then she quietly, and without being told, unloosed her pinafore, and the teacher instantly and sharply inflicted on her neck a dozen strokes with a bunch of twigs. Not a tear rose to Burns's eye, and while I paused from my sewing, because my fingers quivered at this spectacle with a sentiment of unavailing and impotent anger, not a feature of her pensive face altered its ordinary expression. "Hardened girl!" exclaimed Miss Scatcherd. "Nothing can correct you of your slatternly habits. Carry the rod away!" Burns obeyed. I looked at her narrowly as she emerged from the book-closet. She was just putting back her handkerchief into her pocket, and the trace of a tear glistened on her thin cheek. The play hour in the evening I thought the pleasantest fraction of the day at Lowood. The bit of bread, the draught of coffee swallowed at 5 o'clock, had revived vitality, if it had not satisfied hunger. The long restraint of the day was slackened. The schoolroom felt warmer than in the morning, its fires being allowed to burn a little more brightly, to supply in some measure the place of candles not yet introduced. The ruddy gloaming, the licensed uproar, the confusion of many voices gave one a welcome sense of liberty. On the evening of the day on which I had seen Miss Scatcherd flog her pupil, Burns, I wandered as usual among the forms and tables and laughing groups without a companion, yet not feeling lonely. When I passed the windows, I now and then lifted a blind and looked out. It snowed fast. A drift was already forming against the lower panes. Putting my ear close to the window, I could distinguish from the gleeful tumult within the disconsolate moan of the wind outside. Probably, if I had lately left a good home and kind parents, this would have been the hour when I should have most keenly regretted the separation. That wind would then have saddened my heart. This obscure chaos would have disturbed my peace. As it was, I derived from both a strange excitement, and reckless and feverish I wished the wind to howl more wildly, the gloom to deepen to darkness, and the confusion to rise to clamour. Jumping over forms and creeping under tables, I made my way to one of the fireplaces. There, kneeling by the high wire fender, I found Burns, absorbed, silent, abstracted from all round her by the companionship of a book, which she read by the dim glare of the embers. "Is it still Rasselas?" I asked, coming behind her. "Yes," she said, "and I have just finished it." And in 5 minutes more she shut it up. I was glad of this. "Now," thought I can perhaps get her to talk." I sat down by her on the floor. "What is your name besides Burns?" "Helen." "Do you come a long way from here?" "I come from a place farther north, quite on the borders of Scotland." "Will you ever go back?" "I hope so, but nobody can be sure of the future." "You must wish to leave Lowood." "No, why should I? I was sent to Lowood to get an education, and it would be of no use going away until I have attained that object." "But that teacher, Miss Scatcherd, is so cruel to you." "Cruel? Not at all. She is severe. She dislikes my faults." "And if I were in your place, I should dislike her. I should resist her. If she struck me with that rod, I should get it from her hand. I should break it under her nose." "And probably you do nothing of the sort. But if you did, Mr. Brocklehurst would expel you from the school. That would be a great grief to your relations. It is far better to endure patiently a smart which nobody feels but yourself, than to commit a hasty action whose evil consequences will extend to all connected with you. And besides, the Bible bids us return good for evil." "But then it seems disgraceful to be flogged, and to be sent to stand in the middle of a room full of people. And you are such a great girl. I am far younger than you, and I could not bear it." "Yes, it would be your duty to bear it, if you could not avoid it. It is weak and silly to say you cannot bear what it is your fate to be required to bear." I heard her with wonder. I could not comprehend this doctrine of endurance, and still less could I understand or sympathize with the forbearance she expressed for her chastiser. Still I felt that Helen Burns considered things by a light invisible to my eyes. I suspected she might be right and I wrong, but I would not ponder the matter deeply. Like Felix, I put it off to a more convenient season. "You say you have faults, Helen. What are they? To me you seem very good." "Then learn from me not to judge by appearances. I am, as Miss Scatcherd said, slatternly. I seldom put and never keep things in order. I am careless. I forget rules. I read when I should learn my lessons. I have no method. And I sometimes say, like you, I cannot bear to be subjected to systematic arrangements. This is all very provoking to Miss Scatcherd, who is naturally neat, punctual, and particular." "And cross, and cruel," I added. But Helen Burns would not admit my addition. She kept silence. "Is Miss Temple as severe to you as Miss Scatcherd?" At the utterance of Miss Temple's name, a soft smile flitted over her grave face. "Miss Temple is full of goodness. It pains her to be severe to anyone, even the worst in the school. She sees my errors and tells me of them gently, and if I do anything worthy of praise, she gives me my meed liberally. One strong proof of my wretchedly defective nature is that even her expostulations, so mild, so rational, have not influenced to cure me of my faults, and even her praise, though I value it most highly, cannot stimulate me to continued care and foresight. That is curious, said I. It is so easy to be careful. For you, I have no doubt it is. I observed you in your class this morning, and saw you were closely attentive. Your thoughts never seemed to wander while Miss Miller explained the lesson and questioned you. Now mine continually rove away. When I should be listening to Miss Scatcherd and collecting all she says with assiduity, often I lose the very sound of her voice. I fall into a sort of dream. Sometimes I think I am in Northumberland, and that the noises I hear round me are the bubbling of a little brook which runs through Deepton near our house. Then, when it comes to my turn to reply, I have to be awakened, and having heard nothing of what was read for listening to the visionary brook, I have no answer ready. Yet how well you replied this afternoon! It was mere chance. The subject on which we had been reading had interested me. This afternoon, instead of dreaming of Deepton, I was wondering how a man who wished to do right could act so unjustly and unwisely as Charles I sometimes did, and I thought what a pity it was that, with his integrity and conscientiousness, he could see no farther than the prerogatives of the crown. If he had but been able to look to a distance and see how what they call the spirit of the age was tending. Still, I like Charles. I respect him. I pity him, poor murdered king. Yes, his enemies were the worst. They shed blood they had no right to shed. How dared they kill him? Helen was talking to herself now. She had forgotten I could not very well understand her, that I was ignorant, or nearly so, of the subject she discussed. I recalled her to my level. And when Miss Temple teaches you, do your thoughts wander then? No, certainly not often. Because Miss Temple has generally something to say which is newer than my own reflections, her language is singularly agreeable to me, and the information she communicates is often just what I wish to gain. Well, then, with Miss Temple you are good. Yes, in a passive way. I make no effort. I follow as inclination guides me. There is no merit in such goodness. A great deal. You are good to those who are good to you. It is all I ever desire to be. If people were always kind and obedient to those who are cruel and unjust, the wicked people would have it all their own way. They would never feel afraid, and so they would never alter, but would grow worse and worse. When we are struck at without a reason, we should strike back again very hard. I am sure we should, so hard as to teach the person who struck us never to do it again. You will change your mind, I hope, when you grow older. As yet you are but a little untaught girl. But I feel this, Helen. I must dislike those who, whatever I do to please them, persist in disliking me. I must resist those who punish me unjustly. It is as natural as that I should love those who show me affection, or submit to punishment when I feel it is deserved. Heathens and savage tribes hold that doctrine, but Christians and civilized nations disown it. How? I don't understand. It is not violence that best overcomes hate, nor vengeance that most certainly heals injury. What, then? Read the New Testament, and observe what Christ says, and how he acts. Make his word your rule, and his conduct your example. What does he say? Love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you and despitefully use you. Then I should love Mrs. Reed, which I cannot do. I should bless her son John, which is impossible. In her turn, Helen Burns asked me to explain, and I proceeded forthwith to pour out in my own way the tale of my sufferings and resentments. Bitter and truculent when excited, I spoke as I felt, without reserve or softening. Helen heard me patiently to the end. I expected she would then make a remark, but she said nothing. "Well," I asked impatiently, "is not Mrs. Reed a hard-hearted, bad woman?" "She has been unkind to you, no doubt. Because, you see, she dislikes your cast of character, as Miss Scatcherd does mine. But how minutely you remember all she has done and said to you. What a singularly deep impression her injustice seems to have made on your heart. No ill usage so brands its record on my feelings. Would you not be happier if you tried to forget her severity, together with the passionate emotions it excited? Life appears to me too short to be spent in nursing animosity or registering wrongs. We are, and must be, one and all, burdened with faults in this world. But the time will soon come when, I trust, we shall put them off in putting off our corruptible bodies, when debasement and sin will fall from us with this cumbrous frame of flesh, and only the spark of the spirit will remain. The impalpable principle of light and thought, pure as when it left the Creator to inspire the creature. Whence it came, it will return. Perhaps again to be communicated to some being higher than man. Perhaps to pass through gradations of glory, from the pale human soul to brighten to the seraph. Surely it will never, on the contrary, be suffered to degenerate from man to fiend. No, I cannot believe that. I hold another creed, which no one ever taught me, and which I seldom mention, but in which I delight, and to which I cling, for it extends hope to all. It makes eternity a rest, a mighty home, not a terror and an abyss. Besides, with this creed, I can so clearly distinguish between the criminal and his crime. I can so sincerely forgive the first while I abhor the last. With this creed, revenge never worries my heart. Degradation never too deeply disgusts me. Injustice never crushes me too low. I live in calm, looking to the end. Helen's head, always drooping, sank a little lower as she finished this sentence. I saw by her look she wished no longer to talk to me, but rather to converse with her own thoughts. She was not allowed much time for meditation. A monitor, a great, rough girl, presently came up, exclaiming in a strong Cumberland accent, "Helen Burns, if you don't go and put your drawer in order and fold up your work this minute, I'll tell Miss Scatcherd to come and look at it." Helen sighed as her reverie fled, and getting up, obeyed the monitor without reply as without delay. End of chapter 6.
And there you have it. I am going to go off and record the next podcast episode. You are going to go off and have a marvelous week. Please, please use signals when driving or dealing with other humans. I swear, and encourage the use of signals in others, because, you know, maybe part of it is just that life is so fast and so furious for so many people that we simply don't have time to figure things out when people don't do us the courtesy of tossing us a bone every once in a while and in the shape of a turn signal or letting us know what they're doing so that we can therefore plan accordingly. I don't know, but I am thankful. Get it? Because it's almost Thanksgiving. I am thankful for the people who do, and the companies who do, and for companies like Euclid, who do the right thing in every way. It's a good week. I hope you have a great one. I will talk to you soon. Bye. There are many ways to listen to Craftlit. You can listen on your smartphone via the Stitcher Radio app. You can subscribe free through iTunes, or you can download and listen to the iPhone, iTouch, and Android app, where you'll receive occasional extras for the show. Craftlit is supported in a number of ways. Knit Circus, the free e-newsletter featuring 3 rings of knitting, sewing, and fun. You can find out more at knitcircus.com. Also, the What Would Madame Defarge Knit series, Volume 2, What Else Would Madame Defarge Knit, is now in pre-orders. You can find out more from the links in the show notes at craftlit.com. Little Acorn Creations, handmade accessories from the heart and home. And Craft an Effective Blog, a 4-step system for creating a blog that makes sales without being slimy, by Tara Swiger and Diane Gilliland. Happy Hands hand cream for knitters and crafters in 32 delicious scents, plus unscented, at www.happyhandsstore.com. Craftlit is made possible by the generous support of its listeners, and for that, I am truly grateful. And remember, if your hands are too busy to pick up a book, at least you can turn one on.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.